You good?
I am good. Let's all right. Do this.
Get this in one take.
Indeed. Fuck it. Let's do it live.
This is the B-side of our platter, sports fans. And I'm singing just for you, covered in sequins.
Oh. Hi.
Yo, yo, yo. Dude, I had some great beer at Fieldwork today.
Yeah?
Yeah.
What kind of beer?
Hazies, man. Hazies.
Yeah, yeah.
It's my thing.
Did I tell you about this one last time? The Cold Craft? It's like their light lager. I think I did, right? It's like an MGD.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you did.
The other one I've been drinking by Latitude 33 is called Honey Hips. It's like an ale with some like honey suckle, I think, in when they brew it, or I'm not sure. I don't have any cans left. There's just a hint of sweetness to it. Like,
yeah, I like beers a little bit of honey in them.
I started calling Natasha Honey Hips.
How does she feel about that?
She's okay with it.
She was okay with it? All right, yeah. Good. Remember that Modern Times hazy I was telling you about?
The one that you didn't like or the one you did?
I did like.
Yeah.
It's called Orderville.
Orderville?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll check it out.
Yeah, it was really good.
Modern Times?
Modern Times.
Their cans are cool.
You probably get a lot of them down there, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Actually, over the weekend, I went to the Oklahoma bar because that's where I watch a little bit of college football.
They're open?
They had 25% indoor seating, and they had a full outdoor bar thing with screens outside and shit. Yeah. I don't know what they're going to do come cold weather or rain, but they always have Modern Times there, so I'm sure they'll...
Oh, nice.
I'll look for that one once the season starts. It'll be a lucky beer for the year.
Sweet.
Yeah. You had some stuff for the second half. I think we had suspected Putin poisoning of a rival, some tensions with the China-India border. I have something about the CDC and rent moratoriums. Want to talk about the Michael Schmidt book if we have time. Some stupid news stories, coronavirus updates, and looking down here on the list, a return of Dustin Explains Things Poorly.
All right. Can't wait. Let's start with the Russia thing. So, Alexei Navalny, who is a huge critic of President Vladimir Putin, was poisoned, apparently. He was on a flight back to Moscow from Siberia on August the 20th, and he was taken to a hospital. The German government has come out and said that without a doubt, this was a chemical nerve agent that was used to poison him.
Is it called Novichok or Nova... It was the same thing that they got that guy
Novichok.
In England.
Novichok, however you say it, yeah. It's the exact same thing that they used to, Sergei Skripal and his daughter in Britain were poisoned with that as well. I just think, if you think about what's happened since the annexation of Crimea by Russia, right? All of the things that we know for a fact came from Russia that have happened, right? So they annexed Crimea. They shot down that plane, the Malaysian Airlines plane. They poisoned the dude you talked about in Britain. Now this guy. There's Bountygate.
Nothing ever came from that, right?
No.
There's
Bountygate, right, where they're supposedly putting prices on our soldiers' heads in Afghanistan. There's the recent Russian run-ins with Americans in Syria, where they rammed a Jeep or something and soldiers... You don't remember this? Yeah. Yeah, so apparently they've been trying to sort of avoid each other in Syria, American and U.S. troops.
Oh, yeah, because there's proxy war with proxy troops showing up trying to support their side's militia without creating World War III.
Yeah. So there have been run-ins recently, though, where a Russian vehicle rammed an American vehicle with soldiers in it, and the soldiers sustained injuries. Nobody was killed, but...
Intentionally, clearly?
Yes. Huh.
Why? Think that'd be bigger news?
I'm just saying all of these things have happened, and there's been, no response. No, Russia just... no other country that I'm aware of in the world has done all these provocative acts, and I can't imagine anybody else doing them and not having some sort of international response.
And isn't the counter, because I hear people say, well, you can't say Trump is easy on Russia. Look at the sanctions. They're higher than they've ever been, which is true. But what if there's a world where that doesn't matter? Like, do the sanctions not affect them? I don't know enough about it, but it almost seems like it's something you could say like, no, look, of course we're tough with these guys. We did this. Meanwhile, they have private conversations now that don't get recorded or have notes taken about them.
Well, it certainly seems like any actions that have been taken haven't done anything to curb their behavior. I mean, so if they were having an impact, you would assume that the impact would be positive and they wouldn't keep doing this shit.
You know,
but, which hasn't happened.
It's really not as trivial as it sounds, but them winning the 2014 Olympics, it was 2014 Olympics in Sochi, right?
Sounds right, yeah.
Yeah, so they won those Olympics, and the way they won them was by having a massive doping program to the extent that they had like a false door that they could get into the room that the World Anti-Doping Agency and the Olympics thought was like impenetrable, and they literally would just like swap the samples out. They had a device that could open the tamper-proof lids without being detected. They had biological signatures for all of their athletes, so they knew what urine to use to prove certain things, like they wouldn't be wildly off. They had just an elaborate doping system that gave them top athletes and won them the Olympics. But it's not trivial, because winning the Olympics, especially I think outside of modern America, is just wrought with nationalism. And you look at Russia immediately after 2014, they invade Crimea, they reclaim basically their ownership over Ukraine. All the things you mentioned, they all came post 2014. And I think
it gave them the political capital, at least domestically.
It gave the citizens the national pride to create. So it's like the country is a pot with a lid on it, and the citizens can be docile or they can start to get agitated, and if you design it so that you win the Olympics to get your population agitated so that you can go conquer your neighbors, kind of sounds like that. I mean, they definitely did plan to win the Olympics, and I don't think they planned to win the Olympics just so they could have fucking trophies. Like, they did it so they could rile up their population and conquer their rivals and neighbors. It's obvious.
And then recent news conferences with various members of the Trump administration, including Trump, including Barr, and I think Pompeo, they've been trying to direct attention away from Russia and towards China as who they think is the greater threat on the world stage right now.
Yeah, I think over the weekend, Trump was like, Biden wins, China wins.
Right.
He was so unhinged. You saw that, right?
I did. I did see that, yeah. So, I mean, that's the thing. Another thing that came out in Michael Cohen's book today was discussion about Trump selling a home in Palm Beach to a Russian oligarch, where he made $50 million in profit by selling the home. And Michael Cohen says that he told him that, so Trump told Cohen that he believed that it was Putin who was behind the purchase of that home. And Putin was behind his $50 million profit from that sale.
Trump gets played by everyone. Like I said it last week or the week before. Yeah. He's always getting played. He gets played by Putin. He gets played by Kim Jong-il. He got played by his wife. Like,
yeah. All right, so there's that. Let's move on to real quick. So China India thing. That's not really.
So that's been simmering for a while, but you're saying it's getting. I remember about a month ago it really spiked tension. There was like 30 or 50 fatalities on the border there. I think China killed a bunch of Indians.
Pretty. It's kind of a massacre actually. And then recently, within the last few days, there have been some. Shots fired, I guess, is the only thing we can accurately say. Both sides claim that the other side did it and that led to that tension. And they weren't shot, apparently, directly at people. They were warning shots that were fired. China contests the borderlands around India as far as whether India actually can lay claim to them or not. So, I mean, it's just more tensions rising between nuclear powers, because both of them got nukes, that just doesn't bode well for the future. I mean, there's not a lot on that story. I just wanted to bring it up as another example of potential hot war in the near future.
Yeah, and we're always so centered around our perspective. It'll be kind of alarming when World War III shows up on the Eastern Hemisphere.
Yeah. I mean, if it's not Russia or China, it's China, India, like, it's, not good.
Yeah, well, and, you know, it's interesting. China's One Belt, One Road policy program, dream, their manifest destiny, basically, is, you know, a lot of people are afraid of it. If you're not familiar with it, they are buying up ports, basically owning as much of cities all around the world. But essentially, the One Belt, One Road is a new Silk Road from Beijing to Brussels.
Europe, basically.
Yeah, exactly.
They've made huge investments in Africa.
Oh, dude, their investments in Africa are like, they're just like, oh, look at this undervalued real estate. Let me just buy up everything I fucking can.
No, yeah, that's crazy.
But I mean, they own like the port of Athens. They own part, like a huge parts of Australia. They own Times Square, and that's the United States. They like, right. You know, so the idea though, I think, is they can keep their command economy and have these relationships around the world. However, it would be really good if I could remember the name of the country. They built a data server in like Malaysia or something, and they had been paying Malaysia so that they could have that data center there. Well, the data center turned out to be just spying on Malaysians, so the Malaysian government either shut off power to it or threatened China in some way. And there's different ways of maintaining leverage that is going to affect their command economy over time. I think that a lot of what we're concerned about with them kind of trying to build this, you know, basically new world centered around China, which, I mean, it's in their best interest to do so. You know, it makes sense they would want to. I don't see it working once unexpected
consequences
happen. Yeah. And I think that, as is the flaw in planned, like central planning in general, you know, central planning can be effective. However, one of the things it's susceptible to is unintended consequences. What happens when you allocate resources that you don't understand the value of, or their value changes later on? Look at Venezuela, like they completely overvalued their dependence on oil and then stopped producing anything other than oil and then stopped having an economy when oil lost value. Like, I think in some ways, China's long-term plan it's certain to hit a bunch of bumps in the roads when it comes to other countries no longer wanting to play ball. So, and then they have a million plates spinning. So it is concerning. And I mean, a hot war with India is not what we're talking about, but that certainly gets in the way of it, right? So as you build this economic empire you're planning on, the U.S. might be able to tell you a thing or two about occupying a country and then getting mad and shooting at you. So if you want the Middle East, or I guess Africa, have at it, China. But, you know, we're hopefully for once we can be watching news stories about another country struggling with their troops in a far-flung region of the world that they should have nothing to do with. I didn't think I had that in me on that subject, Alan.
Yeah, that was...
I steamrolled over a few things you tried to jump in there. No. I was like, no, me.
No, I think it was well said. Well said. Yes. So we'll see what happens. You had some notes here, which...
Are you familiar with the CDC's rent moratorium that came out last week?
Vaguely, not all that much.
So, what do you understand it as?
It only affects like federal housing or loans or buildings that were funded by federal loans, right? Is that right? So not a lot of the population is really
affected by it. Yeah, the headline makes it sound like it's happening to every landlord, but
really
essentially
not.
There's a moratorium on evictions or rent, whatever. Like you no longer are necessary to pay rent in certain situations.
This was an executive order
this? So this is by direction of the CDC. No, in fact, the president is very much not happy about this.
Okay.
You know, people are saying that although this is well-intended, it's being called unconstitutional. People that say that say it violates the Fifth Amendment by depriving people of their property without due process of law, which makes sense. Like if you own a house and someone else lives in it, but it's your house, they're depriving you of you owning it because you can't do anything with it. I mean, what else can you do with that other than rent it out? So if you can't do the thing that you own the property for, they are depriving you that without due process, which due process might say, yeah, you don't get to charge people rent. But the argument is that it didn't go through that, right?
Right. Okay.
And it seems odd that it's happening because of, or it's happening by mechanism of the CDC mandating it, right?
Very odd, yes.
So like everyone just did a collective CDC, yeah? I feel like there was a combination of like, good, who? Well, maybe, I mean, if I owned that, I wouldn't think it's good. But I mean, overall, I mean, I don't want to see homeless people because, the CDC? So let me get into that. So Congress granted the CDC power to enforce quarantines at ports and at state lines. And when Congress gave them that power, there's a section of that law that the CDC claims gives them the authority to enforce quarantines within a state if it determines that the local authorities' measures aren't sufficient to stop the spread of a disease between the states.
And the in this, whatever you call it, proclamation, there's no recourse for the owners of these buildings. Like the CDC didn't say like, well, you can't evict people or charge rent, but we're going to go ahead and step in and fund that for you, at least at some percentage.
Yeah, I didn't see that
detail
in it.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, well, it seems very ham-fisted, but it also seems, it's not happening to everyone. You know, everybody, like, every landlord in the country didn't overnight get told that they don't own houses
right.
anymore. So, like, people that are running around like the sky's on fire, it's not exactly that either, right? Mm-hmm. Although, if it happened to something I owned, I guess I'd be upset, but I also think I'd be like, all right, you know, hopefully, I mean, I guess the idea is everyone all the way up the chain doesn't have to pay rent, except there's someone at the top of that chain and it's called a fucking bank. And that person like still needs to see money flow through them. So,
and it's very strange that it's being legislated by the CDC. Like, that's
yeah.
Just...
Well, so like I said, Congress gave the CDC that power. Do you want to know when that those changes took place?
Do tell.
2017. So in 2017, for the first time since the 1940s, the CDC had its regulatory abilities
expanded.
Redefined. Yeah, expanded for the first time. Yeah,
it was. Why?
I think it was after the swine flu, and So it was done. It was started under the Obama administration, and the article I could see about it, I wanted to find like a mostly unbiased article, so I looked for some shit from 2017 when it happened. And they were just saying how at the time the article was written, the incoming Trump administration was going to review it, but the earliest it would take effect was March of 2017. So yeah, they got these powers recently and it's, so you can't say it's unconstitutional because it deprives people of their Fifth Amendment rights when Congress said they could fucking do it. I mean, you can say it's unconstitutional, but now we're saying Congress is fucking stupid, and I would agree with you.
Well, I think that it could be taken before the Supreme Court, and they could decide that Congress just overstepped their bounds. It's an interesting thing.
Yeah, I had one quote that jumped out to me. Again, it was by my favorite person of Congress who's leaving, Justin Amash, said, "The unintended consequences will harm people it's intended to help," and he reinstated my favorite line, which is, again, "The best form of pandemic relief is direct payments to the people." Yeah. All of the problems we've seen, this is not him anymore. All the problems we've seen have come from the ways that the attempts to distribute the reckless money printing went wrong, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like there's just been story after story about the ways to divvy that money out went wrong because we didn't just say, fine, if we're going to fucking print money, we should just give it, you know, figure out what that calculates per household and send that out to every house. Or don't do that, because what they did seemed to not help. Like, it, I don't think it helped, right? All the money's gone. And I didn't see anything.
Yeah, it didn't help me personally, but I think it did help some people. But certainly there was a lot of fraud and a lot of waste.
I'm sure the rest of my life while I'm paying taxes on that $3 trillion, I'll just feel like it was really helpful for all those people, I guess. But Alan, I'm telling you, I don't feel like I look around and I can see all these people that got helped by it, you know?
Yeah. No, I see that. I see that. I know somebody that got PPP money for their business and it did help. But like that's a, you know, one in a billion sort of story, I guess. So
yeah.
clearly there's a lot of waste with, that yeah. came with that. So,
yeah. More about that Michael Schmidt book from last week. Do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, absolutely.
So there were just kind of like bullet points from that. I haven't read the book yet, but some of my favorite ones were, I think I have like three of them I wanted to bring up. So one was, so the author, Michael Schmidt, he was the White House correspondent for the New York Times who was embedded on everything that was happening in the Mueller investigation. Do you remember
right.
that?
Yes. Yeah.
He kind of talks like this, like he really has a voice for someone that should be writing words down and you can imagine their voice.
Right, right.
Which I like in my reporters. Like I like reporters that are hideous looking and talk horribly. And you're just like, yeah, express yourself in writing. Let me read it, please. Like, yeah.
Yeah.
So I had forgotten that guy existed because he used to come on the New York Times podcast all the time. And I haven't heard him in forever. In fact, I was wondering if he even works for them anymore.
He does. He does. Maybe he's been a little busy with the, yeah. with the book, and that's why he hasn't been on the daily or submitting articles as often. But yeah, he's still employed by the New York Times as a correspondent.
One of my favorite takeaways from that book was, did you know during the Mueller investigation, at one point, Trump had the idea that he would settle with Mueller?
This is another this is another example of Trump just not understanding how shit works. Like, so he was having a conversation, I believe it was with McGahn, right? I think it was with McGahn, who was his counsel at the time, where he said, you know, I'm not too worried about this whole Mueller thing. You know, if it gets bad, I'll just settle. And McGahn had...
Like out of court.
Yeah, like he would settle...
Like he'd write him a check. Like the president... Like he what?
Like you would settle a porn star affair that you didn't want your wife to find out about, like that, you know?
Hypothetically.
Like, hypothetically, I'll just cut a check to Mueller and, you know, make it go away like I always do. And McGahn had to sort of disabuse him of the idea that that was even a possibility, which is just...
Half of the details in this story are corroborated by notes from Don McGahn saying, because he would have to write memos that would be saved, saying, no, Mr. President,
to be on the record as saying, like, I'm telling you, you can't do this stuff. Yeah. Like, this is not legal.
Yeah, this shit can't happen later. And then they're like, well, did Don McGahn know? And he's like, yeah, I fucking knew. I've got it. I'm Toby from The Office. I've got this file. And you think it's right. a lot. And then he pulls the drawer out from underneath that was all Dwight's complaints.
Exactly. Exactly.
Let's see. It was another one. Oh, I guess at one point he was so upset in retaliation, he wanted to investigate James Comey and Hillary. Like he wanted to hire
a PI, basically.
A PI to go follow them around. Yeah. It's unbelievable, right?
Yeah. Unbelievable.
You know,
the James Comey stuff is just wild. Like the whole, he wanted a pledge of
loyalty
from him, just all that stuff. James Comey's book is another one that came out, you know, a while ago that has a lot of interesting stuff in it too. But just it's almost like you get numb from all just story after story of this stuff.
It's almost like when you were talking about the fires and you listed the acres, I was like, I don't know, it's like the federal
deficit.
Yeah, I'm like, it's just numbers, man.
It's a big
number. I don't know how many acres a fire is. Like,
right. Yeah,
it's like, I don't know how many lies a president tells. Like, all of them, all the lies.
It seems like a lot.
Yeah. I heard Buzz Burbank say on his podcast, do you feel like Trump's ignorance and lack of originality is catching up with him?
I mean, I do to a certain extent, but it also, he's Teflon Don, right?
He's a greased up deaf guy.
Yeah, but like everything
Never
seems
hit me.
Everything seems to sort of slip off of him. And with the news cycles the way that they've been, with all, you know, crisis after crisis after crisis, you know, he seems to get away with a lot.
It's funny, they called Reagan the Teflon president, and it was because he was so charming.
Right.
I mean, in a sense, Trump's charming, but not in the same way. Not like smooth like Reagan was. And I don't like Reagan, but still.
Yeah, I'm bringing no, but yeah. But yeah, I would say they're polar opposites as far as personality.
But he thinks he's him.
He does. Yeah. Do you remember SLC Punk, that movie?
Yeah.
That's a great movie, and that's yeah. Like sort
what
of
made you think of that? Didn't they talk about Reagan? Oh yeah, it was like a reaction to Reagan's.
It was a reaction to Reagan. Yeah. That scene when they're in the park tripping on LSD, I'll never get that out of my head. You see the atomic bomb, remember?
Yeah. I haven't seen that movie in a long time. I was thinking about whatever's house they were in where that guy got all weird.
Yeah, there's a lot of interesting scenes in that movie. Anyways, off topic. A
couple other details from that book. Did you know Don McGahn's ultimate stipulation? He gave like a ultimatum for what it would take for him to be.
Yeah. He wanted to be in charge of appointing every federal judge. And basically, before this, there was a whole like team of people at the White House that would go through the vetting and the nominating of federal judges. And he was like, nope, just going to be me. One guy. I do all of it. And Trump was like, yeah, okay, sure.
You know, while you were saying that, I was trying to remember. I mean, that is an awful huge concession to make in order to hire someone. So he must have really wanted this person to be on his staff, right?
Yeah.
To make that kind of concession?
You'd think so.
You think you would never say he was never a big fan of him after he fired him?
This is true. Right. But then that's you know, sort of par for the course with this president.
Sometimes golfers choke, Alan.
Sometimes. They choke on those three-footers. It just happens.
Yeah.
203 Article III judges, including two associate justices, 53 judges for the United States Courts of Appeals, 146 judges for the U.S. District Courts, and two judges for the U.S. Court of International Trade. So that's a lot of judges.
Yeah, but it also sounds like Forest Acres. Like, I don't know how many judges.
It's hard to quantify. It's just so many.
It's a lot, though.
It's just numbers. Yeah.
It's weird to give one person that, though. It almost seems like there should be some kind of thing in place so that one person can't do that.
Oh yeah, like a separation of power. Yeah. So you know who Don McGahn's best buddy is, right?
No.
Mitch McConnell. So McGahn appoints them, he finds them, he nominates them, and McConnell jams it through the Senate. And that's the judge machine that has been in place.
Wow, unbelievable. Oh,
we got an appearance from my dog. Hey little baby.
Hey Addie.
Oh,
she's so cute. Oh, I see. Yeah, I can tell she went to the groomer.
Yeah. You want to see her anus?
Not really, no.
Oh, okay.
She looks good, though. She's a cute.
Sure?
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure. Right. I'm good. Yeah. I appreciate the kind offer, though.
Yeah. Well, she walks around with her tail up a lot, so if you come over, you could probably see.
Have you seen the gems they sell for cats?
I've heard about this. I feel like it's not true.
No, a friend of mine bought one.
Why?
It's hilarious.
I feel like the cat should be able to consent, but then again, they live at our whim in every other way.
Indeed. Anyways.
All right. Last thing about that was, last two things about that book, and just fun facts from the White House. Did you hear what McGahn's last straw was for quitting? Like what he was like, that's it. I've had it up to here.
I did, but I can't remember what it is right now.
It was when Kim Kardashian got clemency for an inmate. He was like, I just can't stand for this shit. I mean, I get the point. He was like, if you're releasing people from prison because a celebrity has been lobbying you, that's not a good look. But,
yeah.
I mean, he did a lot of things that weren't the best look. It's weird.
Right.
That was his line. Like, I feel like I need to read that chapter and really find out more about what that means. Because that feels
there
like I can't.
A lot of lines crossed on the way to that one.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, a lot worse. So.
And just to finish up this section, the last thing was about him. Supposedly, that was the book you referenced last week that had talked about Trump having a stroke.
Well, the book didn't, though.
I know. So I wanted to talk about that.
Okay.
So it was hilarious. So the author in the book had said that there was a neurological event. What was it? How was it phrased?
So basically potentially a neurological event. So what the author said was that when Trump went to Walter Reed, that unscheduled visit to Walter Reed, which they claimed was for a physical, which is crazy. Apparently Pence was told, be ready. You may have to assume the powers of commander in chief because the president could be under anesthesia potentially based on whatever's happening when he goes to Walter Reed. Now, they asked Pence about this, and he's like, I don't remember that. Now, I would think if you're the vice president and they tell you, oh, by the way, you might have to assume the powers of the president, that you might remember shit. Like,
but how did that pertain to the information coming out that it was a stroke? Or the because what ultimately – well, go ahead.
So
I want to get to what ultimately how it came out. But
so Trump tweeted
No, how did it get reported? It got reported that he had a neurological event. Is that what it was?
The only thing I saw was reporting that he could be under anesthesia, not that it was specifically going to be a neurological event.
Not at the time. I'm talking about when the book came out.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah. The quotes that came out from the book, the president reacted to. That's what I'm trying to say.
Right, he did.
Yeah, so last week, I think like last Monday or last Sunday, the excerpts from the book came out, and it said something about being concerned about his brain, but it didn't say he had a stroke. And the president says, I did not have a stroke, like on Twitter. He's like, I did not have a mini stroke or a series of mini strokes. And then either Michael Schmidt or the New York Times, whoever, goes, yeah, we didn't say that. We didn't say you did. Like, we said that you had a neurological event. It's really cool that you came out here and said the word stroke, and we all just started talking about that.
Well, I think part of that was in reference to the whole man, person, woman, camera interview, basically that test is designed.
You failed, by the way.
Well, I probably did. That test is designed to determine if you have dementia. It's not an IQ test.
Yeah.
And I think that's what that was in reference to. Hmm. What was it? Man, person?
Person, woman, man, camera, TV.
Ah, right. Clearly, you're 185 IQ.
Yeah, nailed it.
Clear, nailed it.
But doesn't that give new context to him not being able to walk down ramps or hold glasses without shaking? Like, I'm not joking. Like, like, please, listener, I wasn't taking a cheap shot there. Like, all of the things that were kind of funny or treated lightly and, you know, kind of ribbing at the president that I don't like, that's in a different context if you think that there was, you know, brain surgery taking place, right?
I mean, if you've ever had a family member or a...
My stepdad had an aneurysm he had to have surgery for. And they told us afterwards that there was a vein collapsing the whole time, and they were terrified, and they were really proud of the way they finished the surgery, and he's back to his normal self. You can completely have brain surgery and be a normal human being.
Yeah, I mean, what I was going to say was if you've ever had family or acquaintances or known somebody who's gone through dementia or Alzheimer's or that sort of disease, you can see some of the symptoms in this president of the way he's acting and the way he just seems unhinged a lot of times and reacts to provocations that aren't there. And that's, again, that's not a cheap shot on my part. I'm not saying that it's like trying to score a point here. I'm just saying that he has demonstrated symptoms. I'm not a doctor. I'm just saying that it's out there, you know?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Yeah. Isn't it weird that you can't just say that?
Yeah, I guess.
Like, you should be able to say, like, I'm not insulting the president to say I'm concerned about his mental ability. Like, it's kind of in the same category how... Could you imagine, imagine there isn't a word reporter, so there's nothing to load this with, and just imagine that you're an observer and you're seeing all these telltale signs of democracy kind of being in peril and the foundations of fascism being propped up. Like, how could you express that in this current climate? Like, how could you say, like, hey, this is what I'm seeing, this is what I'm afraid of? There's no way to call it that. You just get into a new argument about whatever the fuck someone wants to say to derail you from your point because they don't want to look at it.
Yeah, it's very difficult to have a good faith conversation about these topics, I guess, especially with somebody who's a supporter of the other, of his.
Either side, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you want to do some light news?
Yeah. Yeah, light sounds good.
So these are just signs that we're having a little bit of our normal life again. It's September, kids are going back to school, which means stories about teens doing dumb shit and them being problems. So they're not eating Tide Pods. Do you know what they're doing this year?
I don't know. Is this a TikTok thing?
It's a TikTok thing called the Benadryl Challenge.
Oh, fun.
Yeah.
So they're trying not to get allergies.
Yeah, yeah. You just fall asleep, right?
I would imagine, yeah.
Yeah. I think it might be like that Ambien thing where, like, if you can fight through falling asleep, it's nuts.
Roseanne would know all about that.
She would.
Yeah.
Other kids back to school stories. There was a fun story, Alan. Kids are back in school, which means there's guns in school, Alan.
Oh, fun story.
Except kids aren't in school, right?
Right.
Kids are on Zoom. Right. And there was some scare piece going around about how some kid had a gun visible in
at
his
a Zoom meeting?
In his Zoom chat.
Jesus.
Like, all right. I guess you should expel him.
Wow.
Yeah, zero tolerance, Alan.
Zero. Yeah. Zero tolerance. No means
all,
no.
That's all I got for that's all I have for like lighthearted news stories. You want to talk about the coronavirus?
Yeah, sure. So we're up to over 190,000 Americans dead at this point.
I feel like I knew that. Like, obviously, anybody listening to that is like, yeah, it's a big number. But when you said that, I was like, wow, we're right at 200,000.
It's a lot. It's a lot. The CDC has released some information about vaccines. Apparently, there's two vaccines that are on the cusp of being viable, one from Moderna, one from Pfizer. They're in stage 3 trials right now, although there's talk that they might declare an emergency and release them before that's completed. And they're saying that as soon as October, November, these vaccines could be released to the public. Obviously, they're going to tier who's going to get them first. So people, frontline workers, people in nursing homes, that kind of thing would get them first, and then it would proceed to the rest of the general public. There's a ton of them actually being worked on right now. There's something like, I think, over 100 different potential vaccines are being worked on at the same time. There's a lot of concerns that there's going to be political pressure put on the CDC by the White House to get these released before they're really tested and deemed safe for people.
Yeah, because so they're at the phase now where, so I think Pfizer and Moderna are kind of neck and neck, which I think the last thing I saw, Pfizer's kind of pulling ahead a little
same.
Bit. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So they're at the phase now where they've injected this vaccine into thousands of people and you can't ethically give those people coronavirus. So
they have to wait and see what happens.
Yep. And then half those people have placebo, and how many people really want to sign up to get placebo when you could be getting the vaccine? They're just having trouble getting people to participate. They have to wait and actually see if people get sick. You know, I saw another, can I lean into something here on that?
Go for it. Yeah, absolutely.
There was a summary that I read from a study out of Stanford and UCLA that was basically saying that the probability of getting sick with COVID for the average person in an average city in the US is something like 1 in 50,000.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and they said the chance of mortality was like 1 in like 600,000. Now, right off the bat, I'm going, there's 200,000 people dead. And 600,000 times 200,000 is probably more than there are people. So these stats can't be, but
yeah,
that's
that doesn't
how
make
stats,
sense. Right.
But it's still statistics, right? Like, obviously. Right. So then I started looking at it, and I was reading the article, I was reading the summary, and the numbers that people were saying as your chance of getting sick were the median number. So they were saying the median risk, you know, and then they would say a number that was like 1 in 50,000.
Sure.
But, and this, I just wish I was a little bit more literate with reading
statistics
and scientific data, because I know that median is not average and it's being set as average. Like, I know this, like, people that are talking about that study are saying like, oh, look, on average, you're 1 in 50,000 of getting sick and 1 of like 600,000 of being hospitalized or mortality. But median is not the same as average. Median, if I'm not mistaken, is if you plotted out all the data going, like, you know, from bottom to top on a graph, it's the number in the middle.
Correct.
And you could plot out all of the people in the upper half of that graph, like 80, 90-year-olds or whatever, but the number that's the number in the exact middle is the median, right?
Right. So it's not the average. It's the,
okay, so that doesn't fucking mean what people are saying it means. Like, right. People are sending that study around saying you have a 1 in 50,000 chance of getting sick, and that's just not true.
Yeah, so average is when you add all the numbers up and divide it by the number of numbers, right?
I collected baseball cards. I would add up their hits and divide it by their at-bats. Because sometimes there'd be an error and you'd catch it.
Yeah, so no, the median is not that at all. It's not the same. The median is just a number in the middle, which is different.
And also another thing about that study I was talking about, for the Stanford-UCLA one, was that it was saying those numbers, 50,000, 600,000, was person interactions. It's like you would have to come across, talk to 50,000 people before you would become sick, which is how I took that information. I mean, it's a very short summary. Feel free to read it. Search Stanford, UCLA, COVID. It was July or June data, so it was fresh.
Yeah. I mean, I probably encounter 600 people a day on average or at my job. So
what? Yeah. So what? Like three weeks at work?
Yeah.
What? Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah.
Dustin explains things poorly. Is that what's up?
Man, the second half was all me. We really should have split this up a little bit more. Do you feel like you're getting to talk at all?
No, I think I'm good. I'm good.
Okay, cool. Okay. So one of these days this weekend, I saw a really funny news article or did you know thing, and I dove into it. Did you know that at one point in the 80s, Pepsi had the world's sixth largest navy?
Pepsi, like the beverage company.
Pepsi Cola, yeah.
I did not know this, no.
Can I tell you about this?
Yes, please do.
So there was like a world exposition, not like a world's fair or something, but for some reason, Pepsi and Coke were being drank by like U.S. leaders and Russian leaders. And the Russian leaders were like, whoa, Pepsi, holy shit. And going for a while, Pepsi was the first like international company, US-based company, to start making cola in Asia and selling it to Russia.
Okay.
And so they had a relationship for a while where guess how Russia was paying Pepsi?
Oil? I don't know.
No, their chief export.
Vodka.
That's not a joke, by the way. Their chief export, yeah, vodka.
Right.
I mean, it might not still be, but like, in the last decade, it might have gone to natural gas, but I still think vodka is their primary export. They don't have a GDP. Anyway, they were selling vodka to Pepsi, who Pepsi then would hedge and get money for.
Right.
And in 1980, the U.S. boycotted all Russian products, so they couldn't take vodka as payment anymore because Russia invaded Afghanistan. So they struck a deal in 1989. The Soviet government and Pepsi signed an agreement where Pepsi would act as the middleman to scrap 17 submarines and 3 warships. So there was a point in time where Pepsi owned 17 subs and 3 warships. They ended up selling them and scrapping them to like Sweden, I think. Isn't that crazy?
That is crazy. That is international trade, man. We give you vodka, you give us Pepsi.
You'd think they would have had more commercials with submarines jumping out of the water and a Pepsi logo on them, right?
Yeah, it's Pepsi time.
Yeah.
Britney Spears popping out of a submarine.
Yeah, yeah, it's a taste of a new generation. Oh, fuck. Am I up now? Am I up again? Time for Dustin's questions?
Yes.
All right, hold on. Dustin's questions. I got my questions. Dustin, so first of all, I have a huge update from Dustin's questions last week. Alan, remember when I said, who's Debbie?
Yes.
From the Eminem song, Fuck You, Debbie?
Yes. Did you figure it out?
Oh, yeah. Everybody knows this.
Oh.
Yeah. More than one person texted me, Debbie is Debbie Mathers, Marshall Mathers' mom.
Oh, it was his mom.
Yeah, it was his mom.
Okay,
it was
I think
so funny.
I even said that.
Yeah, you did. You're like, well, it's not his mom. And I was like, yeah, it's definitely not his mom. That's Kim Basinger.
Right. Everybody knows this.
Fuck.
8 Mile.
Yeah. I guess he doesn't perform that song live anymore because they like actually settled things. She sued him for $10 million. And apparently he gave her like 10,000 or something. I don't know. I read a lot about this.
I
got a question for you.
Yes.
What's a better song about murdering your classmates? Jeremy or Pumped Up Kicks?
Oh, wow. I'm going to go Jeremy just because...
It's a better song.
It's a better song.
Pumped Up Kicks is catchy, but you get sick of it.
I think people don't even realize what Pumped Up Kicks is actually talking about.
Even though you can clearly hear what they're saying.
Oh, yeah.
Like Jeremy...
They're killing somebody for his sneakers.
Yeah, or just hoping they've got faster sneakers, right?
Yeah. There's an interesting story of Pearl Jam. I think it's... what's that song called? Alive or I'm Alive or something
yeah.
like that?
Yeah. Are you going to tell me what that's about?
Yeah, so it's okay. about... So literally the lyrics in the song are actually true. So Eddie Vedder
yeah.
found
okay,
out...
that's pretty sad then.
Yeah, he found out that his real father, who his real father was after his real father had actually died. His mom told him, like, oh, by the way, that guy was your dad, which is a pretty fucked up thing to deal with. But if you hear him interviewed about it, he says that, you know, the people in the audience didn't understand like what the meaning behind the song. And they were just like, they thought it was like an anthem, like I'm alive, you know, like,
well, yeah. I mean, the music video, he's like climbing around a stage and like jumping off of the right. scaffolding. So, I mean,
right. So,
but,
no, but
meanwhile,
I think that...
in the Jeremy music video, he's literally killing everybody in his class.
Yeah.
Like if I never saw the Jeremy music video, I don't think I would have thought it
connected
was.
Connected the dots.
Oh, no. Jeremy spoke in class today? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, but he said that he actually, like his view of the song changed because of the way the audience reacted to it. And so they.
Really?
Yeah.
That's cool. Have you seen Pearl Jam live?
No. You?
Oh, dude.
I'd love, it's a bucket list thing for me, but
yeah, you got to. It's like one of those ones where you're like, okay, I get it. After everybody, like it, you'll get it.
Yeah,
I mean, you
sure.
do now. I'm sure
yeah,
you can
absolutely.
Get it. But yeah.
Yeah. Cool.
Oh, I had one more question. Okay. I have a plan, and I just want to know what you think about this. I'm gonna get COVID either. Early or mid-October, quarantine for the last 2 weeks, and then I'll have the bodies for like 2 to 3 months, so I should be able to get through Christmas at least.
The bodies? You're just shortening antibodies with bodies?
You're wasting all the time I saved. Like, this is like, it's wasting all that time and then some, Alan. God. Yes, bodies is short for antibodies. It's going to take me a million times saying that. Just, I hope I never have to explain it like this ever again.
Yeah,
look at
yeah.
how much time this has been. It's been like 30 seconds.
Totally. I think it's a great plan. I'm on
oh,
board.
Oh, you do?
Yeah, I'm on board.
Yeah. Good and then, because then I could get sick in like February. Who cares, right?
Yeah, it'd be fine. You made it through the holidays. It's all good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, knock on wood, I don't Herman Cain on that one. But...
Jesus. All right, should we move on to what we've been consuming in the media?
Yeah.
So I watched, I actually watched two things on Netflix. One I didn't even put on the list here. What the Great Hack on Netflix, which is a documentary about Cambridge Analytica and how they impacted the 2016 election and Brexit both. I don't
By taking advantage of like Facebook's
yes
data collection?
Yeah, it's a really interesting documentary. I highly recommend it.
Because it was really just about leveraging the way that Facebook shared the information of the users with people that were advertising, right?
Yeah, but there were so many data points that enabled them to focus
no,
in
I know,
on these
but what
very
I'm saying
specific...
is like Facebook was looking at those data points and sharing them without any consideration or concern about the consequence of
correct.
That, right?
Correct. Okay. Yeah. Correct. Anyways, really, really interesting documentary. I recommend that highly. The other movie I watched was Time Trap, also on Netflix. And it's so let me give you the description. It is so basically there is a college professor. He's an archaeologist, and he's been searching for these people that got lost looking for the Fountain of Youth. You don't really understand all that at the beginning. I know the concept sounds a little cheesy when I say that, but the beginning of the movie is not really that cheesy, I would say.
Is he finding artifacts of like inverted materials sent back from the future? And like, oh no, never mind. That's Tenet.
No, and it's very, so it does, obviously it does deal with time, but at least the first like hour or so of it is very... Like, you don't really have to suspend disbelief all that much for it. There's some weird stuff happening. So basically, the professor goes and he gets lost or he doesn't, he goes missing, basically.
Is there like a search party? Is it like a
yeah.
search party movie?
Sort of, yeah. Search party, okay. And they're his students, and some acquaintances of his students end up going looking for him. And they end up finding this cave where he went. And it turns out that the people he was looking for, it's a lot more personal than you understood. Ooh. At the beginning of the movie. I would say, so it's about an hour and a half long, and I would say the first hour is like pretty good. Like I wouldn't give it like maybe a 3. And then the last half hour is just, I think if it had a bigger budget, they could have pulled off more what they wanted.
Is there anything more disappointing than the third act just unraveling?
I mean, it wasn't terrible. It was just the CGI and some of the plot points were kind of weird, and it got a little cheesy.
On your scale, jeez.
Right, I know, right?
After Cosmos.
Now, so it's not like that. I would say, like, obviously, I'm into sort of like nerdy shit, right? Like, so this appealed to me a lot. And the way they dealt with sort of the time passing or time travel aspects of it, I thought was interesting. I give it like a 2.5. Okay. So better than last week's movie. Yeah. But if they had the ending of the last, 20, 30 minutes, if that had been on par with the rest of the movie, it would have been a solid 3.
Is it a Netflix original, or do they just own it?
They just own it. It's not okay. Netflix.
Well,
original.
Actually, at this point, that's a good thing. I'm not that into that new Netflix
originals.
They seem
to be like they have a pattern for what they're doing with Netflix originals, and they all kind of seem like cookie cutter. I don't know.
Yeah, even if they're different genres, they feel like the same type of movie.
Yeah, exactly. Anyways, so I did like it. I recommend watching it. Just know that when you get to the third act, it's going to be a little wonky, but it's fun. It was a fun movie. So
cool.
2.5.
I'll check it out. Time Trap. Yeah. So I saw Tenet. See Tenet twice.
I definitely will.
Yeah, and I can't stress this enough. Like, I can't vouch for your particular movie theater, but I mean, the theater experience was wonderful.
Nice.
I hope yours. I mean, I'm interested to hear what it's like in other states, but that's going to vary by occupancy mandates,
Right, county regulations and stuff.
Yeah. I watched a movie on HBO streaming called, The Pickled Man or The Pickled Man. Have you seen this?
No.
I know you don't have HBO, huh? Fuck.
I gotta get HBO. You've mentioned like 4 things from there.
I know. So like 20 minutes in, Seth Rogen shows up, and then realize that I won't ruin the movie for you.
Is it starts a stoner movie?
Yeah.
Okay.
This is a garbage movie I put on while Natasha was asleep. Then she woke up, and then I was like, I don't know what this is. She's like, it's kind of funny. I'm like, all right. And then we got to the point where we're like, look, we want to go to bed. And we're like, okay, this is a good stopping point. And then we watched the rest of it the next day because it was fun.
Nice.
So this, I want to say Polish immigrant moves to New York, and he's working at a pickle factory, and he falls into a vat, and he's brined, and that brine keeps him alive. They actually do a really funny cutaway explaining it.
So is he like a superhero pickle guy?
No, he just, it's like Ootsie the Iceman, except the pickled man. Actually, that's what it is. He's the pickled man instead of the Iceman. That just clicked.
Gotcha.
So how I told you like 20 minutes in the movie, Seth Rogen shows up?
Yeah.
He's the old guy too. And it's obvious. Like I was like, oh, that was him. And Natasha's like, yeah, it was him. The fuck? So he plays the pickle man and like his great grandson or something.
Okay.
And, I don't have to sell the rest of it. It's a stupid movie. If I explained it, you'd be like, I'm not watching that. it's funny, though. I mean, it's Seth Rogen. If you can laugh at Seth Rogen, and if you can watch Time Trap, I think you'll like this. But yeah. who did I want? Oh.
The coffee place.
Yeah, this week's episode is sponsored by Fordo Energy. Fordo Energy. You can find them at any CVS or a Hudson News. Do you travel? Do you like coffee? Get Fordo Energy, made out of all natural, organic, free trade sourced coffee. They're good.
But does it have what plants need?
It has what plants crave.
Okay, good.
Which is you putting your mouth on the glass and drinking them. Like Brando. Yeah. Also, they're not a paid sponsor.
Right.
Or I paid. Is that? I don't know how this works. I also started to watch Seaman and I fell asleep.
What is Seaman?
Aqua Teen. Aqua.
Oh, Aquaman.
Aquaman.
That was terrible.
No, really? It was good. Yeah, it's like an 80s like action movie almost. It's clearly modern production, but it's the theme of the script could have been in an office building with Bruce Willis walking barefoot fighting.
So you're telling
germs.
Me there's a good DC movie. All right.
Dude, I almost feel like DC was just waiting for Marvel to wrap up their big story arc for them to be like, okay, we can do things now. I'm kind of getting into the DC universe, mostly because those guys of the F and Nerd podcast have actually sold it pretty well.
Yeah.
They start talking about all the directors that are getting on board and, you know, complaints people had about a certain cut of a movie and the way that this other director's cut looks good. I'm excited about the Batman. Robert Pattinson was the co-actor, supporting actor in Tenet, and holy shit, is he dreamy. I like halfway through the movie, I leaned over to Natasha. I was like, he's going to be the next Leonardo. Because he's that pretty boy that you're like, I don't fucking care about this guy. He's a decent enough actor, but he's pretty. It doesn't matter. Right. And I think he's going to be a force for a while. And I think we're like, you can get on board with me now. Get on board. Like, I got on board on DiCaprio early too. So we can be cool kids for now and listen to everybody else snicker. He's got a jaw so he can play Batman. That's all you have to
Batman. Yeah.
So I'm excited about it. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. Didn't think I'd talk about DC Universe so much, especially for falling asleep halfway through Aquaman. But that's just because I smoke too much weed and I'm in my 30s. If it's on and the sun is down, I'm going to fall asleep halfway through. It doesn't matter how good it is.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel you. All right.
You have a quote for us?
I do. So the show quote of the week, the price of apathy towards public affairs is to be ruled by evil men. Said by Plato. Which seems obviously relevant to our modern times.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, when I edit these, I always say the quote, and then I hear you just go, yeah, I like it. And every time I'm like, say more. But then I just listen to you give that quote. I was like, fuck yeah, man.
Right.
I don't have anything to say. Fuck yeah, man. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, what you said. Well, we made it to the end of another episode without hating each other, Alan. I hope I didn't offend you. No offense.
None taken.
All right, man. God bless.
Cheers. Ah, fuck. That was fun.
Now this is podcasting.